Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 211 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, tough stuff about life. This is going to be an amazing podcast, one that I've really been anticipating doing, and I'm so honored to have our guest with us to discuss a tough topic, and that is preparing your family for life without you. Wow. Yeah, you heard me right. Before we begin the show, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. All right, now here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. This is really going to be a special, special podcast, so I want to hear your feedback because it means everything to me when I do. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
One of my favorite places to troll for amazing guests is by reading publications like the New York Times. They have a wonderful column that comes out once a week called Modern Love. And this one I just found to be a total mind blower. I just couldn't believe it when I read it, because not only did it involve an extraordinary woman, but also a medical condition where she is literally preparing her family for life without her one day. What's all that about? Her name is Mary Bergstrom. And Mary, she says she's as lucky as they come. She's had a lot of cool professional experiences, like starting her own Youth Insights business in China, speaking at TEDx, and writing her book, All Eyes East, Lessons from the Front Lines of Marketing to China's Youth. She's benefited from unique experiences like climbing to the very top of Mount Kenya, sleeping outside in the sand of the Sahara Desert, and giving a wedding speech in Mandarin Chinese. Oh my gosh, she's got two beyond cool adopted children as well. She was also diagnosed with spontaneous coronary artery dissection, a condition that has resulted in 8 heart attacks and 1 near-death experience. And this is what she wrote about in her New York Times Modern Love article, Preparing My Family for Life Without Me. Mary, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to be with you.
Wow, Mary. Okay, speaking of honor, geez, I mean, there are no words. I was just totally blown away, as were everyone else. If you read the comments from your own column, it just went on and on and on and on with what happened to people when they read your words. So I want to first thank you for doing that. That was, you know, that was extraordinary. Can you explain to everyone out there what spontaneous coronary artery dissection even is?
Yeah. So spontaneous coronary artery dissection is something that I wasn't diagnosed with until 2014. And I actually had my first heart attack in 2005. So it really is something that we're getting more information about, but we know far, far, far too little. And it is, I like to think of it like a little bit of a Star Trek evil empire disease. It attacks primarily women. And a lot of times what they do know is that it comes around significant changes in hormones, so around pregnancy. I have never been pregnant. I've always wanted to adopt. My two beautiful babies are both adopted. But it happened to me in 2005 when I was a newlywed. And basically what it is, and they couldn't figure out, they thought, you know, did she have cocaine? What's going on with this person who's 32 years old? She has a Pilates body. You know, this doesn't look like our typical heart attack patient. And what it is, essentially, is it's a tear. So it's a tear that forms in one of the blood vessels in the heart, and it creates a heart attack. And it can be extremely dangerous because not only does it create a heart attack, but a dissection, because it's a tear, it can continue to rip. So when you go in, it's really important, if you do have spontaneous coronary artery dissection, that they don't do an angiogram immediately, because it can create a worse tear than you started out with.
So this is not something that can be fixed surgically.
You know, it really all depends on, you have to wait until the dissection, until you see each dissection is unique. So you see what it is when it's happening, and you kind of make a judgment call. It really is up to a crackerjack team of doctors and a patient who's really alert and really able to tell them what's going on and how she thinks or he thinks their body is responding.
Huh. So have you been approached about doing surgery, or how does that work?
Yeah, so I've had, let's see, I think 2 or 3 angiograms before we knew that it was spontaneous coronary artery dissection. Yeah, I've had 3. But now that we know what it is, we really try to medically manage it. So if I feel like I'm having some sort of a chest pain, and I wanted to alert your audience to what that feels like in women, so we can maybe talk about that in a minute. But if I feel like I'm having a heart attack, then I will go to the emergency room and I will give them a play-by-play so that they can understand what I'm feeling and they can respond accordingly.
What is that feeling that you have? Because as a physician myself, I know for a fact women do it differently than men. So what does
Absolutely.
It feel like for a woman?
Absolutely. And the first time that I had a heart attack, I thought, this doesn't look anything like what I've seen on television. So I thought it couldn't be a heart attack, but I knew I was having a heart attack. There's something just in you that is a gut feeling. When you connect with it, you just know. And you have to answer that. It feels a little bit like, a little different every time for every person. So you have to understand that there's an element of customization for each experience. For me, it has felt primarily like there's weight on my chest, like a 20-pound weight is on my chest. And then also sometimes like there's a rubber band that's over my shoulders and cutting off the circulation from my chest and my back.
How does that work in terms of your ability to just function day by day with what I would imagine is the stress of uncertainty?
Yeah, I think that, so there's a couple of points there. The first point is that the interesting thing about the heart that people don't talk about very much because they're so afraid is that it can heal. So my heart has actually healed. I have no stents. I'm medically managed. I have a defibrillator to make sure that I don't have another heart attack that stops my heart. But other than that, I'm able to pretty much live the life that I want. The real challenge for me, and I think the challenge that a lot of people can relate to, is just anxiety. How do I deal with the fact that each day could be my last day? And in reality, unfortunately, whether we like to admit it or not, that's what all of us are facing. So because I'm more aware of it maybe than I would be without this condition, or 100% more than I would be without this condition, for me, it's like a walking tightrope. So I have to understand every day, how can I be regimented enough to make sure that I'm positive, make sure that I'm taking care of myself, make sure that I'm staying focused on the things that really matter to me, and then also to stay in the present and live in the now enough to really enjoy and be surprised by what comes.
I love that. I mean, that's one of the reasons why when I was reading your words in the column you wrote, it really hit home in so many ways, because you're absolutely correct. Tomorrow, and for that matter, the next minute isn't guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
We're just
mm-hmm.
here. And if we live a life of self-compassion and gratitude, you know, it helps. And that's where mindfulness comes in, too. And your words really speak to that. You know, you started the column talking about hanging a picture in your beautiful home. And then, you know, it kind of went through the entire story. And there you were. I'm going to read your exact words. "More than decorating, I was curating my legacy. These images would surround my family the next time I went to the hospital, and they would provide comfort if I didn't come back. These pictures would become priceless." Wow. You know, that whole issue of legacy, that whole issue of thinking forward and kind of planning like that, how does that help you with your anxiety?
Well, it certainly is a scary thing to do. There's nothing scarier than imagining a life for your family without you in it. There's nothing more terrifying. But at the same time, there's something that is tremendously peaceful when you think about, what is it that I really want to leave these people with? How can I make sure that they are confident, that they know who they are, that they know who I have been, that they are secure in that relationship? And how can I create mementos and memories and touch points for them after I'm gone? And hopefully that will be in 90 years. I may outlive everybody. But if that's tomorrow, I have a really solid relationship. Everyone knows how I feel about them. I know how they feel about me. And it's been a beautiful life experience, however long or short it is.
Incredible. There's another paragraph that I'd love to expound on. "To stay with my family, I have tethered myself to new ways of doing things. I have stopped eating and sleeping the way I want. I've exercised more, then less, then not at all. I have learned to rely on doctors more, then less, then not at all. I have hunted for possible cures more, then less, then not at all. What matters most is already in front of me." Whoa. Okay, that was breathtaking. So what do you mean you've stopped eating and sleeping the way I want? What does that mean?
Well, who wants to eat the way that I eat and sleep?
Just to give you an example,
I mean, I don't drink the coffee that I want to drink. I don't drink the booze that I want to drink. You know, rolling a cigarette, that used to be a really fun thing to do in the 80s. I don't get to do that anymore. Forget about it. I haven't eaten red meat since eighth grade, but, you know, I really watch what I eat. I don't have a lot of, I have a pretty strict diet for myself, partially because I know what is right for my heart, and also partially because I really listen to my heart. And I understand that if I don't get enough sleep, if I don't drink the right amount of water, if I don't do what I need to do to kind of walk this tightrope, I don't have the best experience in life possible. So for me, I feel like I want to do everything that I can so that I feel as good as I can, so that I can have the most enjoyment out of this beautiful life that I can get.
I love the way you say, "I listen to my heart." Mm-hmm. I just think that that's amazing. Instead of just sort of externalizing everything, you actually listen to it, which is amazing. And, go ahead.
It's a different experience too, because I think that when I started this practice, I thought that my heart would say different things than it says. So I listened with my brain, and I would say, this is what would feel good on this kind of a day. But that's not really listening to your heart. When you listen to your heart, it says surprising things. When you listen to how your body responds, how does it feel about certain things, and let it make the choices, there's a definite reaction. That's how you get a happy heart.
Wow. Okay. Whew. And then, you know, it must be frustrating for you because you're such an active individual. You know, you don't climb to the top of Mount Kenya by just, you know, sitting there and staring at the top. I would imagine, maybe I'm incorrect, but it sounds like you've always been quite physically active. What's it like now with physical activity? What do you do?
Well, physically speaking, I try to get at least 30 minutes of cardiovascular exercise a day. And I really let my heart tell me how it can work on that particular day. So I don't judge it too harshly. If one day it feels like it can do more, I really check it and say, okay, heart, do you really think that you can do more, or is this your brain and your ego trying to make you do more? And I try to listen to it. I think that my my happy level is I need so much less to be fulfilled these days. So I'm not trying to go to the gym and get like a gym body. I'm just trying to really feel good in this experience being a soul in a human form.
Beautiful. Just wow. It's almost like you get to be, as it were, locked in mindfulness.
Absolutely.
It's almost like,
and you know what?
Yeah.
So do you. So does everybody.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And listening to you, I think a huge message here is that there's not a single one of us who can, you know, sit back arrogantly and say, oh, well, you know, I'm good to go. You don't know.
No.
And I think that's another beautiful argument for living in the moment, living in the present, being here. There it is. You know, you noted in your column that you had a near-death experience. Can you share what that experience was like for you?
I would be so happy to. That experience was amazing. I'm working on a memoir now, and part of the reason that I'm providing that service of my time is because I really want people to understand that the afterlife is a beautiful experience, and my personal experience with it was so safe and so fulfilling. I passed away in China for 10 seconds, and I never felt so safe in my entire life. I felt very welcome and loved, and I felt like there was no boundaries, no lines between who I was and who other people were. And I saw the white light, and I felt my grandfather. And truthfully speaking, when I was resuscitated, I really missed that sense of belonging and that sense of safe space. So the opportunity is for everyone to know that when you do pass away, at least from my experience, my notes from the field say that it is an excellent experience and nothing to be feared of.
Whoa. All right. Officially blown away again. When did that occur relative to all the other heart attacks?
So I had two heart attacks in 2005 when I had just gotten married, and those two heart attacks really gave me permission to live the life that I wanted to live. So I moved to China with my husband. I started my own business. That's when I wrote the book. That's when I did the TEDx talk. That's when I adopted my children and rode around in lanes learning Chinese and having adventures. And that's when I had the heart attack that killed me. And that was in 2013. In November, and I moved back to the U.S. in December of 2013.
Wow.
To have better access to doctors. And that's when the life that I had designed for myself really came undone. I wasn't interested in the things that I'd been interested in anymore. I couldn't imagine picking up the life that I had so painstakingly created for myself. And that's when I really learned that I could not in any way, shape, or form play God in my own life.
Wow. And therefore, you had a new normal. You speak to this in your column in these sentences. My interests don't extend so far anymore. I stay with my children until they fall asleep. And in the morning, they crawl into bed with us. We are so lucky. I wouldn't give up this intimacy for anything. So that kind of speaks to what you just said, right?
Absolutely. There's nothing better than really feeling love and companionship and similarity between you and another person. That's the spiritual experience of God on earth.
Amazing. So when you're writing this memoir, when do you think it'll be out?
I think probably next year, 2020.
Okay. You're back
as fast
on.
As I can.
You know that. Right? My producer's going to be all over you, right? And
fantastic.
We're going to get you back on, and we're going to revisit this entire thing because we can't wait to be able to read this memoir, which I think is going to be exquisitely rich, and I'm smelling a TED Talk out of that one too, no question about it. Are there any particular outstanding lessons you want to kind of address in the memoir? Any, not even so much lessons, but messaging?
There are so many messages that I feel like I want to release and to offer to people. I think one of the ways that I would like to encourage your listeners is just to go to my website, go to marybergstrom.com, and I'm going to be creating a blog that just helps explain how I deal with anxiety and helps give notes from the field for how I'm doing and hopefully different ways and forms that I can help people.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, a beautiful way to kind of bring this all together was your last paragraph in your column, which I think kind of says it. This heart has provided complete clarity, become a trusted instrument for focus. Fear is a distraction. Love and gratitude are my true purpose. That morning, all I could do was stay clear on what matters most. I picked up the hammer and nail. I could see it come together, a house filled with happy memories, a place we could settle. Incredible, Mary. I mean, really, my hat's off to you for this extraordinary life journey of yours and your ability to be able to communicate these messages and lessons, words of wisdom to all of us. So that we can hit the pause button and go, oh, whoa, what did she just say? Yeah, so true. And we're all going to be sitting here, you know that, waiting for that memoir. So, you know, get cracking here. Let's get this thing written. We want to be able to read it. Oh, my gosh. You know, I can't wait. And I'm already telling Pamela, our wonderful producer, to just reach out to you and schedule you now. Come on now, you know, because... I really think it's going to be extraordinary. And again, thank you so much, Mary, for being on the Herb podcast. This has been incredibly important to all of us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Of course. And everyone, we've been talking to Mary Bergstrom. I want you to go over to her website, Mary Bergstrom. I'm going to spell that M-A-R-Y. B as in boy, ergstrom.com. Learn more about her wonderful life. She's going to be writing blogs, you know, basically messaging what's going on her very unique journey, to say the least. And we're all going to be anticipating her memoir, which will be coming out sometime in 2020. And it's a guarantee, honey. We've confirmed her to make certain she's on this show. Hands down. Oh, boy. I love this. Okay, now, everyone out there, you heard me before. Now, here comes your second official reminder. Get on over to iTunes. Rate and review this wonderful episode. Because, you know something, it was that terrific. I want to hear from you. What's your feedback? What are your thoughts? Hey, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the HER podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the HER podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and please stay well.